Good evening, everybody. I'm Danielle. I'm an alcoholic. And Oswald asked me to speak. He said I'm chairing the meeting. And about I think it was yesterday or the day before, he said I'm not going, but you're going. I said, well, that's fine. So it doesn't matter. You know, I always say yes. My home group is the Blue Monday. It's on the east side of Montreal. But my first home group was Anchorage, Alaska. It was the Glacier Group. And I never forget that, because that's where I start to get sober. I don't know where I first started drinking, but I do remember when I started to get sober. And it was in Alaska for me. I've been sober since August 18, 2005. And I don't know who told me that. I think it's Bob. At the beginning of my third year, between my second and third year, so you'll see. This is a tough one. And he's right. I don't want to scare any newcomer, but I don't know why, but there's a lot of questions in your mind. I know. But it's a much better place than where I was before I started to get sober. So it's a bad place, but it's nothing compare. I'm from Montreal. I'm from east side. I'm from Ville d'Anjou. And a long time ago, I've be involved in sports at a very young age. From as far as I know, I was in some kind of sport. Family, all right. Father, alcoholic that I know now. Brother, alcoholic. My mom is in the Al-Anon. Sorry, she had to do that. But now I know why she could deal with the whole thing at home, the whole chaos. My childhood, fine. Like I said, I don't remember when I first drank. There was alcohol at home. Father was drinking a lot. I was born in downtown Montreal, but we moved right away to Ville d'Anjou. It was a new town. It was brand new. Maybe a new start. I think you know what I'm talking about, a new start for my father, which I did the same thing later. We all know the new start. You know, we move in a different town. Everything's all right. We'll start over. We'll start fresh. But problem follow you, or you follow the problem. Wherever you go, you're there. So somebody told me that, and that's the truth. You know, no matter where you go, you're there. I've been in Alaska. I'm telling you. I'm going to tell you that. So, like I said, the childhood is okay. Besides that, Mom is the one who's taking care of the family, really. You know, keep the family together. Money-wise, my dad worked a lot. Now I know why. You know, we all look back and see all kind of things that we didn't understand at the time. Working hard, why? To pay for all kind of stuff. You know, not just the house, but the booze and all that stuff. You know, you got to be very intelligent to be an alcoholic. You know, you got to be very strong, too. Because you got to find work, you got to lie, you got to do all kind of stuff. You know, you got to find money somewhere. So we're bright, you know, we're smart. So everybody said that you know, a bunch of dummy over here. Not true. I know a lot of people that's pretty smart, but not smart enough to do it on your own. That's for sure. And that's something that's beyond anybody's comprehension. And I don't know how it works, and I don't care. It works. It worked for me, and I hope it worked for you. So, go to school, and that was just, we'll start playing hockey like everybody play hockey here. And my other brother didn't play hockey. And we're pretty good. Went down after that. We got moved from, I don't know if you remember, on the east side, L'École Arcand was on Sherbrooke Street. And they moved to those open area school after that. That was the big fashion thing in those years, in 1968, I think, 70. That was open. You got class, 200 people in the class, and was it 73, 75, something like that. So for us, we moved from a place that you got a little class and everything, and you go into La Polyvalente Anjou. It was fun. It was freedom. You can't even go. You go anywhere else, you go play with the boys, we learn how to play ping pong, we learn how to play cards, but we didn't learn anything at school, you know. But they make you go up in your grade, they go Okay, no problem. You graduate. And for me, I don't know what, in those years, I was not touching alcohol at that time. Matter of fact, I was so involved in sports and all kinds. I was not drinking even soda. I was drinking juice. There was no bad thing coming in my body. No way, Jose. Never in my life there's going to be any bad thing coming in my body. And so after the plug out, I asked my mother, I said, you know, I would like to go study and go somewhere. So I went to private school. And I worked for it a little bit. I did some side job and everything. And my mom, through my father, whatever it is, but they pay for that, which it was a good thing for me. So I did private school for 2 years. I doubled my secondary four because my grade wouldn't be good enough to do it. So it didn't matter. I wanted the thing to change. I was not going anywhere. You know. And during that time, I gave up hockey and got involved in martial arts a lot. So it was the beginning of the Taekwondo was starting to get pretty big in Montreal in Canada. And I got involved in that a lot. So I trained. And I was part of the Canadian team for a while to go to 1980 was the Moscow, 1984 LA, and 1988 was Seoul, Korea. But that was later, and I couldn't make it because I was already in the bag at that time. But I got involved in Taekwondo, and that was my life. I worked out. I was in sport. I studied in sport. I went to Cégep de Montréal in recreation. And after that, I went to university in phys ed, in Sherbrooke University. And went all over. We start traveling. Went to Winnipeg, great city. Nothing to do. We couldn't even order pizza after 10 o'clock. That was weird. And that was my first trip. You know, when you're young and you travel, and there's a team, and it's great, great. And already in the bunch of guys, there were some people partying a little bit more than training. I wasn't even close to that. Yes, there's wine at home. I drink wine. I hate the smell of beer. I don't even drink hard alcohol. And I'm about, 17 that time? Something like that. And the only alcohol I would drink when I would go out is those, it was big thing also, those Volcano and all those things that you go to TT bar, whatever, KT, Cassidy, whatever. And those are fashion drink and taste like juice more than alcohol. I didn't want an alcohol. I didn't like the taste. I didn't want it. And so train a lot, play hard, but work hard and train hard. And I moved to, after I'd done with college, I start drinking a little bit, party, you know, on Friday night. And there was nothing to it. The day after, I would drink a little bit. The day after was fine. I could, if something would happen, I would drink maybe the week after or the month after. It didn't matter. There was an obsession. So I went to Sherbrooke University. Big apartment, three guys. Lots of fun. And I start drinking. And like I said, I didn't want to put any bad thing in my body. And it's, for some reason, it was a daily thing. We were drinking every day. I was missing some training. And if you know, I'm sure some of you have been involved in sport, reflex, physical fitness, you cannot lie to that. You cannot cheat on that. The day after, if you're not there, you're not there. If you go to class and you sleep a little bit and you study your book the night after, it's fine. But if you go and you got to perform, you cannot. And you miss one, you said, well, I miss one, I miss another one. And if you know what, you see what I'm saying, it's the same thing with AA. You miss a meeting, you don't go to the second one. And it's just, it's so close for me. And I like to do the thing of together. So after 2 years in a university, and I was a treasure. I was a treasure for the faculty. the phys ed faculty. I just gave up. I quit. I didn't want to go to school. I just wanted to party. I was in charge of the party for the phys ed. I was in charge for the party for the law, which was the other building on the other side. I was in charge of all the parties. Nothing serious. So I quit university, which is my worst, I think, it's my biggest mistake. Just to have a degree would be, it's a good thing. No matter what kind of degree you get, it's great. It gets you a lot of place. So I start hanging around. I got a job as a sports director. And all those years, I've been working also as a sports director. I went to Quebec games. I was a chief of mission. They call you go with the kids and bring it. But I was at all the happy hour that you can get, all the free booze you can get. I was there. And it reached a point that it was way too much. People were saying things, you know, you don't see it. They said, Danielle, you know, you drink a little bit too much. Yeah, but I work out tomorrow morning. Yeah, but it doesn't matter, you know. That was my excuse, you know. I would go work out early in the morning so I can drink early. It's weird. So, as a good alcoholic I am, and somebody told me, they said, Danielle, you like to have fun. And I was in golf also. I did all kind of stuff. They said, why don't you go to Club Med? So I applied to work for Club Med, and they took me. Big mistake again. I was more on vacation than the people were over there. I was partying more than the people were partying there. But I was the hit, you know, everybody was wanting to party. But, you know, you're supposed to work for them. You know, they're not supposed to work for you. And, you know, you're supposed to teach your sports. And, you know, if you know, it was just, and I worked for Club Med for about a year and a half. I worked in the Caribbean. I worked in Greece. And after that in Greece, I finished my contract. And let's say that they didn't ask me back. They didn't fire me, but that was enough. So for Club Med, and those years, that was those single life Club Med. There was no, right now it's different. Those resorts, they're more family oriented and everything. So to not be asked because you're partying too much in those years, it's because I was way over the top. And I start to discover cocaine. And trust me, I'm an alcoholic, period. Cocaine for me was just a way to stay awake a little bit longer so I can drink more. If there would be cocaine and no beer, I wouldn't do any cocaine. They would say, oh, well, drink water. No way. It can't be. Or some of the guys I was hanging out with, they would do a line of cocaine, orange juice, and sit down. It's a nonsense. So I'm a full alcoholic, I guarantee. And so after Club Med, well, during that time I met a girl that we got married. She was with a hostess as the Club Med in St. Lucia. And she lived in Erie, Pennsylvania. And I moved to Erie, Pennsylvania, got married, and worked for a fitness company. It was a fitness consulting company. And I was talking with Thomas earlier about Boston. Yeah. And that company traveled me all over the United States. And I was going in like fitness club, Gold Gym, whatever the gym was, they had problem either for training staff, financially, you know, administration. And I was going all over those towns, New York, California, name it, and try to fix the club. But I'm drinking, I'm still drinking, and I go in a fitness club smelling like booze. I can't believe that. I mean, I go in a place to try to fix things up for a better health club, and I'm hangover from the night before because we went partying till 2 o'clock in the morning. It's just the paradox. It's just unreal. And you remember when I said I didn't want to put any bad thing in my body? I don't take any aspirin. For me, aspirin was bad. I don't take any medication if I don't have to. But I put cocaine in my nose. I drink beer like it would be like it would go out in my pores, you know. It's just unreal. It just got over me. And after a few years of that and a bad relationship, and my marriage was you know, we got married for the wrong reason. We got married out of Club Med. Everything is nice, palm tree, sun, blah, blah, blah. Life is good, you know. Now we're going in Pennsylvania, snow. Landscaping, wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning, mow the lawn because I don't have my green card yet. And I'm like, man, I was teaching golf not a month ago. Now I'm on the lawn. It's 5 o'clock in the morning, freezing for $4 an hour. Man, what a stupid. But, you know, we just decided to get married, and it's just, it didn't work. We were not ready. We met in an environment that it was so beautiful, and go back to real life, you know, pay the bills, get a car, get a house, you know. So I quit. We divorced, and I went back to Club Med for a little while. They took me back. I was in Florida, in Sandpiper. And I did this one I got fired. One night, I went crazy. I don't know about us, I'll tell you, but it's about clothes, you know. We were at Sandpiper became like a family Club Med place. And all the guys and the girls are there, and we're starting drinking and everything. Suddenly, all the clothes goes off. And there's kids all over the place. So the big chief comes to me and said, well, I think, Danielle, it's over. And I had to leave. You know, I had to leave. So finally, I come back here at home, and my mom knew about it. Everybody knew about it. They keep telling me, but I didn't see it. I was okay. You know, I was fine. I was just partying, no problem. But I'm about 27 years old right at this point. I have nothing. You know, I got a Jeep. Whoopee-doo. I live with my mom's when I come here. I don't have any more place in the United States. So, again, one lady that I met in Florida told me, she said, Daniel, why don't you try to do the real thing in golf and come and play for real? So I went to Arizona. That's where I started my geography. I move all over the place. And the funny part, and that I have to tell you, for 20 years, I thought somebody stole my doors of my Jeep downtown here in Montreal the night I left. I was partying and everything, and I thought somebody stole my door. So one night, when I came back about a year and a half. I've been back about 2 years right now. So we had a dinner at home. My brother was partying with me a little bit. He's in the program too. And we're sitting and we're like this, and I'm just shooting that, like, you remember when I left in a big snowstorm in for Arizona, no doors on my Jeep because somebody stole my door. My brother looked at me and said, are you nuts? Nobody stole your door. You pawned it for booze and cocaine. And for 20 years, I thought that was a big story. You know, I left without doors. I had no problem. And I crossed border with that. I don't understand. I had golf bag in the back, door, no door, snow, and I crossed the border with it. Try to figure it out. You can't even pass a bottle of wine. So I went to Arizona and played and went to work for Arizona Golf Resort and get in the program, the PGA program. I was at the beginning of the program, but you know what? I played. We were playing skins game on Monday, and I was in the with the pro doing lessons a little bit, but I was still partying. I got suspended one time. They do drug tests, random drug tests, and random alcohol tests, substance abuse. And I know that morning I showed up, and it was not random. You know, the pro over there, he just looked at me. And so an hour later, I get somebody comes to me and says, Danielle, you got to go for it. You've been chewed by the computer for the random test. Yeah, right. You know, and you could smell me for a mile away. So I went over there, and obviously I got suspended for a week, and I got a meeting with the chief of the resort and tried to help me. The guy really tried to help me, and I couldn't see it. I still couldn't see it. You know, I've been going for almost 10 years right now, going all over, having fun, getting fired, not responsible for nothing. So at that time, I met a gentleman. He said, Danielle, he said, I work in the RV business, and, you know, do you want to stay in golf or do you want to work and make some money and start building something? I said, well, I don't know anything about RVs. Well, he said, we'll send you to manufacture and everything. He said, you just have to show up and work and blah, blah, blah. And he knew the thing. But in that field, in sales, in RV business, let me tell you, there's some heavy drinker over there. But some of them showed up. I don't. If I drink, I'm gone. And I don't know why. I just don't want to see anybody. So they sent me to manufacture and everything, and I worked for that place for a while. And get the heat off me sometimes. You know, I would show up. They knew I was drunk. But like I said earlier, we're smart. Find all kind of excuses. And my girlfriend, she kicked me out. All kind of crap. You know, you look at the guy, he wants to laugh at you, but I don't know. So I did that for a little while until I got fired too from that place, and I worked for another RV company now they send me all over. They send me in Nevada. I live in a casino for 6 months. I went to Quartzsite, Arizona, Laughlin, Nevada, Vegas, and you know, the one that I work in Laughlin, I just want to move forward a little bit. I met a gentleman from Alaska, Paul. And he said, well, in the summertime in Arizona, it's very hot. And he said, why don't you come and work for us over there in the summertime? Because obviously, I'm good at what I'm doing when I'm there. You know, I would go away. I'm a binge drinker. And at the end, I was been drinking every day, but that was weird. But I would go for 3 days in a row, and I mean solid. And after that, I wouldn't show up for another day or two. And the old excuse, I was sick, I didn't feel good. I don't know what's going on in the air here, the dust in Arizona. So I said, well, I'll go to Alaska. Like this. You see, I don't know about you, I'm extreme. You know, somebody would offer me something, I would be like, okay, you know, Alaska, sounds good to me. Never been there. So, went to Alaska, worked for a summer over there, and I liked it. Beautiful. People drink a lot over there. Mm. It's great. Close to Russian border. I was in Anchorage, which I went to Fairbanks sometimes and everything, at that point on, drinking vodka. And vodka, it didn't matter if you had orange juice or not, whatever. So I decided to buy a house over there because it was so nice, it was so much fun. So I buy a house in Alaska, and I live in Anchorage, and I meet a girl, and I don't know what she found in me, but I mean, she told me when we split that we never had a day that I was sober. And I don't know why she was with me. Till this day, I don't know. Maybe she tried to save me, but I don't know. But so I go to I'm in Alaska. I'm in my house and work for a company in the RV business over there. At that point, I got bottled in my car. I got bottled in my office. I got bottled in two or three different RVs on the lot. Okay, because I know where to go. Since if the owner of the company goes this way, I'm going that way. And I know I got something there, and the house. It was unreal. And in the wintertime, we were still going down in the south. I still work with the company in the south. I still do it to this day, and I don't know why, but they kept me. So now in the wintertime, and I feel sorry for you. I just came back about a month ago, and I'm already tired of the snow, you know. But I heard you had a bad winter. Like I said, there's booze all over the place, and I went to Reno for the winter, and my girlfriend, the first year, it was fine. The second year, you know, you start to go a month and a half, 2 months, and I didn't want to come back. And you know that feeling of free? Because I was not with her, I felt free. It should be the opposite. I should be with her instead of, you know, the minute I was in the plane, I was like a teenager. All right. No house, no girlfriend. I'm going to work. You know, and I showed up over there, and I'm walking on my knees. But So she decided, and at that time she lived on another side of town, Nakers, in a condo. I'm in the house right there. She called me in Reno. She said, Daniel, I bought a house. Oh, I said, great. And I said, where? She said, on Baxter Street. And Baxter is about 500 feet from my house to her house. I said, this is it. I'm done. Because every time I was going to her condo, I would say, well, I got enough. I got to go do my laundry. I got to go do that. So I would go away for 2 days and drink like crazy. And when I went over there, I was like, you know, I was not, I tried to be nice, but I really wanted to drink. I was with her, but I really wanted to drink. And she doesn't. Well, she does, but, you know, not like we do. You know, leave a half a bottle of wine on the table. That was normal for me. It was a sin. It was like, what are you doing? You know, well, we'll leave it there. No, put the cap on. We'll bring it home. Well, but we've got enough. No, we got some at home. It doesn't matter. You don't leave that. It was a big argument for half a bottle of wine. We got 10 at home. I mean, it's just nuts. So, and at that time, it started to get bad because, you know, she was so close. I rent the house. I moved with her. We rent the other house. I moved with her. And at that point, the hiding would start. I would go in the garage, drink a shot, come back. Like she wouldn't know. I would start again to work out early in the morning, 5:30 in the morning. Daniel's ready. I'm going to the gym, come back so I can drink earlier. I would do breakfast early in the morning because she worked before me. I would do breakfast and she thought I was so nice. But the only reason I was doing that so she can leave so I can drink faster. That's true. You know, I was doing breakfast. She's like, wow, you're so nice to me and everything. The minute the car would leave, I would have a drink. And then we're talking 7 o'clock in the morning. I couldn't go without a drink. And I could go with a drink. I was at that point that to go through the day, I would have to drink something. I would get edgy. I would get grumpy. I didn't want to talk to people. I'm in sales. Bingo. So you don't make any money. You don't talk to nobody. And so one day, I hit it pretty solid. And the owner of the company said, Daniel, why don't you go home? And I went home. And we talked again. I went back to work. But at that time, the gentleman, Paul, that I met, his son was part of AA. And I knew that kind of. And one night I'm sitting in my living room. I'm in Alaska. And no matter where in the world, and I've been a lot of places, South Africa, I'm passing a lot of places. No matter what part of the world you are, if you have a TV and a bottle of booze, you're fine. So why don't you stay home here or stay in other place, you know? I'm in a place you can go snow machine, you can go on a glacier, you can go in a place, but I'm sitting in my living room with a bottle of booze and a TV and watching TV. What good is it? And I'm lazy. I said, man. And at that time, obviously, Julie, I'm so sorry for we split, you know, it was just bad. She cleaned up her house, and she gave me a suitcase full of empty bottles and full bottles. She just threw it away. She said, that's yours too. And I opened it, and I couldn't believe it. She found it in closets and all those places. I would sleep with her at the end. I would sleep on the couch so I can have a shot at 2 o'clock in the morning. I would turn on the TV, have a shot. I mean, it was not. So that night, I'm like, I said, that's it. So I call, and I call, his name is Kurt. And I say, Kurt, I said, this is Danielle. And he knew. I don't know why. Well, I know why, but he knew. He said, yeah. I said, Kurt, I said, that's it, man. I said, I don't know what to do. He said, have you been drinking today? I said, no, I stopped last night. He said, well, don't drink again tomorrow, and I'll take you somewhere with me. And I heard about AA, obviously, my dad. You know, I came here one time. I flew back. My dad has 10 years at Jean Lapointe and all those things. So I knew a little bit about it. I wasn't strange to AA. I knew it was a place to stop drinking. I didn't know anything about it. I heard about my dad was talking about making coffee. I didn't know what the big deal was making coffee, you know, and everybody's got the better coffee than the other one, so you can con somebody to make coffee the rest of his life. No, but, I mean, so he came and got me, and he asked me some question. He said, Daniel, he said, that's it. I said, that's it, Dirk. So he said, come with me and sit down. It was an open speaker meeting. And I sat by him, and I'm looking, and people talking, you know. And I like it here because the format, it looks so familiar. And when you were asking me, Sean, about the tape, over there's no question. You get tape all the time. It doesn't matter. You don't even ask. Shut up and do it. That's the thing. So thanks for asking, anyway. But... So I asked Kurt, I said, hey, am I going to talk? He said, no, Daniel. He said, at this point, I don't think I have anything to say here. He said, just listen to what they're going to say. And I found my sponsor the first night, you know. And for me, it's like anything else in my life. I got to get involved. If I stay around and I look, I'm thinking too much. I'm thinking about things that, not bad thing, you know. But I gotta get in. If I'm not, I'm going to find something else. So, the gentleman was speaking. His name is George, and not old, but he was a former military, Air Force, very disciplined, which I was before. Now, you know, I lost my discipline with alcohol and all that stuff, you know. What I used to do, I'm not doing it. I'm not helping anybody. I was just, and I'm not. I was not a guy who would go in the bar and walk all over. I would go home and not saying anybody. I don't want to talk to anybody. Matter of fact, some of my friends would knock on my door to see I was not dead, and they'd see me in the living room, just totally out. But they would know that I was okay. But that was me. At the end, I was drinking and stay alone. So, I go see that guy. I said, George. I said, I'm Danielle, and do you want to be my sponsor? He said, you know what I'm going to ask you? I said, no, I have no idea. He said, are you ready to go all in to be sober? And I said, yes. I have no idea why, but I said yes. You know, I'm in the spirit right now. You know, I'm going. Oh yeah, yeah. So. He said, and I was before the speaker, the other, there was something else going on. So I said, he said, come and see me after the meeting, at the end of the meeting. So I go see him at the end of the meeting, and he's counting money. So now I know he's a secretary, and I know all that stuff. And he said, well, go in the kitchen and clean up the kitchen. I look at him and said, what are you talking about? I said, I just want to stop drinking here. And I said, I'm not here to clean up kitchen. You know, and you tell me what to do, and that's exactly what he's telling me. So I went over there, cleaned up the kitchen, come and see him, and he said, well, right now, he said, take the book. He gave me the big book. He said, read one page 164. But Monday, come and meet me at this meeting. It's on Spinard, bad place of Anchorage, very bad place. How long, Sean, did we do? Okay. And so it's a Lino club. It's a former tavern bar that now it's all AA. It's meeting all over every hour. AA is pretty strong in Alaska, and there's a lot of good to be done over there. But for me, I thought it was a test. I'm looking outside. I said, it's a bar. I said, this guy's testing me. So I'm looking all over the place. I'm not going to drink anything. I'm going to show it. And he's not there. And I look at the bar, and it's all coffee. And it was, the flavor for the coffee and everything. So I called him. I said, where are you? I said, you testing me. He said, no, I'm in the parking lot in the back waiting for you. So I had my first meeting with him. From that day, we had four meetings a week with him. I had four meetings a week with him. And we're going to Wasilla, 45 minutes away from Anchorage, and doing coffee, cleaning, got involved, and shut up and listen. That's pretty much what it was, you know. You know, like I said, we're pretty smart. But this is beyond being pretty smart, you know. And when I didn't know about sponsors, I was like, what do I need sponsor? I know how to read. I know I can understand those things. It's just the progress. And you talk with people that have been there before. You know, it's nice to talk with somebody. It's a drunk talking to another drunk, you know. He knows, or she knows, what you're going through. If you talk to somebody who's not an alcoholic, you say, well, you're nuts drinking at 7 o'clock in the morning. But you know that you have to drink at 7 o'clock in the morning. It's not that, well, I'm thinking about it. No, you do. And if you don't have booze, you look for it. And you find it. So we're smart. We find it. We steal it. We lie. We do it. But so, and it was not even a year. And I'm in, you know, and I'm like this. I get an opportunity to work here in Quebec. And at this point, I'm on a ninth step. I'm like this. I said, you know what? It's time for me to go and make amends to my family, because the people you hurt the most is the people close to you, you know. The people you don't care, they don't care either. But the people who care, you hurt them. And so I was talking, I always, to this day, I talk to my sponsor once a week in Alaska. But I talked with him, I said, George, I said, would it be a good idea? First of all, I was supposed to go to Reno first. He said, no, this one you're not going for the winter, Reno and Las Vegas. He said, I don't think so. And I didn't, and I listened. At that point, I was ready. I guess you got to be ready, or in my life, it was a point that there was no other solution. So for him to tell me something, I'm like this. I say, it couldn't be worse than what I'm doing right now. So I did. And it was a good decision, you know. I'm not the boss anymore. And it's nice to hear, because I can tell you what to do, you know. Very easy. But it's not maybe the right thing to do. So he tell me, you're not going there, but this one, we should talk about it. And that's why when we're talking about those books, I start going through those books. And my first meeting was in Granby. I was working at the little RV dealership in Granby. They were starting a new line. And that's funny, because I made a few phone calls, and you do have to make a few phone calls, because some of those numbers are not even there anymore. You know how it is. You know, you call and it's disconnected or whatever. But on the phone, I called Jocelyne and Robert. And I always remember that. I said, Jocelyne, she's out on only. Robert he's in charge of the group in Granby. I said, I'm Danielle from Alaska. I'm an alcoholic. And she started laughing. I said, no, that's true. I'm from Alaska. I'm coming in town. I want to be at a meeting. She said, and there was a silence for a moment. And she said, well, okay, well, we're there at 7:30 Friday, blah, blah, blah. And I showed up, and that was my first meeting in Granby. And I sat down, and the format totally different, totally different. And I sat there, and I'm like, well, they're not doing this right. You know, wait, what? No, that's not it. So right after, I called my sponsor. I said, George, I said, damn, it's not working. I said, you see, they don't do the 12 step the same way, and they don't do that. And he said, shut up and listen. And that's his word. He said, just sit down and just listen. And that's the truth. You know, the message is the same, no matter what format you use. You know, there's the same thing. We all have the same disease. And when somebody speaks from the heart, you know what he's talking about. You know what they're talking about. No matter if you make a mistake in front, no big deal. You know, at least we have the courage to be here. And like I said, it's not about smart. It's something way above that. And so I started in Granby, and it didn't work at the work I was. So I took work on the South Shore. And now since I came from the state, I was doing meeting in English. This one was French. I said, well, I'll do some English meeting. And I found the Blue Monday. And I got very comfortable with the group. And that's the thing, you know. If you're not comfortable with the group, either you do something about it, or you just look around. It's something that, you know, you got to think about yourself a little bit too. You know, because if you're not good, you're not going to help anybody else. And like I said, that between that, the second and third year, I'm telling you, it's all kind of things going on. And so I do Blue Monday. I get involved. I'm trying to do a lot of 12 steps. I do the phone line. And trust me, that helps you a lot. If you think you're screwed up, do the phone line. And you get out of there, you're like, just, man, life is good. Life is good. And I'm not making fun of people who call. It's just, you know, we think we're bad. There's somebody worse than us. And there's somebody better. But, you know, every time we go back in our own mind and we think, you know, oh, man, there's somebody much worse than you. And you get out of there, and if you help somebody, you think you feel good, you know. And that's the program. It starts to sink in, you know. If you help somebody, you help yourself big time, you know. Make you feel better. You're productive, you know, in the community. An example, and that's a funny part. And you gotta have fun with it. For me, I gotta have fun with it. If I'm in the program and it's too serious, forget it. I'm gonna find a group that we're gonna laugh, we're gonna yell, we're gonna, you know, you do a 12 step. An example. My first 12 step that I did, it was in Alaska. And the guy, even if you listen to this, he'll laugh. His name is John. And he called us. Hey, Jerry, come on. Yeah, I want a party. What? Oh, man. So, and I'm with another friend that we're in the theater watching the movie Pink Panthers. That was the first night of Pink Panthers. And no thinking about it. We got to go. You know, and that's the thing. I want, you know, if you're new here and if you really want help, I guarantee anybody here who's going to hear that is going to help you, no matter what. There's nothing important enough to stop and say, okay, I'm going to go help that person. We stop. And, you know, good thing comes to when you want to do good thing happens. We got out of the theater. We said to the lady, excuse me, but we got to go. We got somebody in problem. They give us 2 tickets each, bring a girlfriend and whatever, you know. So there's always something good. So we showed up over there, even behind the Salvation Army, drinking with a buddy. We don't know the guy. The guy comes, I don't know. And suddenly we just start talking and try to get his keys. He's got the van. And he's like, Danielle, he says, you know, he said, why you don't like that situation? He said, because you want to drink too. And he's right in my face like this. I'm always, trust me, John. No. I really don't want to. And he's big. He's a big dude. There's some big guy. And so I see Gary in the back. He get in the van and pick up the keys. So at least he doesn't have a car. So we leave. He doesn't want to get in my car. He's like, no, I'm fine. Okay, John. We're not, you know, no fight, no nothing. So we drive around, we sit in the parking lot in the car, and suddenly the phone rings. Son of a bitch, yeah, you took my key. I love you, man. You know those messages? And we're laughing so hard. And what he doesn't know, that we kept the message, all those messages, and he's filmed. He's on a camera from the Salvation Army in the back, okay? And we got all of that. And he spent the night in the tank. They arrest him, but he didn't get in trouble. He spent the night in the tank, and they let him go to death. Over there, they just take whatever they pick up from the street. They bring it. They let him sleep for the night, and as long as they didn't hurt anybody. So now the day after, he doesn't show up for the meeting. So we know, you know, he's kind of he doesn't want to show up. So we go get him, and he. You cannot do that with everybody, you know, but we're like, John, I hate to say that, but we got everything on tape, and we got your message, and we start in the meeting, giving the phone to everybody, and John was just so red, and we hear, love you, man, you took my keys, I'm going to kick your ass, and to this day, he's back in the program, because, you know, for him, and I don't know if it's going to work for everybody, but we make fun of it, it was a serious moment. Nothing happened to it. God bless, you know, what happened. But he's back. He's still in the program. I called last week. He's still in the program. So if you try to do a good thing, usually good things come out. Maybe not now, like the promises said. Maybe not at this point, but sooner or later something's going to happen. And I missed that a little bit here. I talked with a few members, you know, like a couch commitment. I don't know if you heard about that. My sponsor got me in one thing. He said, have you ever heard about a couch commitment? I said, no. He said, tonight you're getting somebody in your house. He's going to sleep on your couch. They just pick up that guy the night before at the hospital, almost dead. And he was a technical assistant, assistant technical surgeon. I'm telling you, it's, you know, like I said, you don't have, you know, you can have all the study in the world. It doesn't matter. And this guy was dying. And I had to bring him once a day to empty his stomach and all kind of stuff and everything. And for me to get a stranger in my house, it was tough. But I said yes. I didn't have a choice. Because if it would be me right there, I would have loved to have somebody to say, hey, God, I got a place. We have rules. He did the dishes. No phone call. In the morning, I would bring him to the library. You know, he couldn't stay in my house for the day. But he knew that there was somebody there. He died. And I'm sorry to say that. He passed away last year. He went out again. And he could. He was at that point that, you know, another drink and he died. And you see how sick it is? He knew it. And he passed away. They called me to tell me that. And, you know, it's nice to talk about the program and everything, but you got to do it. You can know all the thing, all the books, you know, and sometimes people are going to tell me something about the book. I don't know the phrase, but I know I'm doing it. And that's what helped me a lot. All I can say, it's a better place than I was when I at the end. You know, I hear a lot of time, my worst day in AA is better than my best day when I was drinking. Yeah, I got some problems. I had a good time until the last 2 years. You know, it was not fun. I was physically hurt at the end, shake, you know, throwing up. You got all the signs, and you just avoid it. You just thought, no, that's okay. I just need another drink. I'll be all right. That's what it is, you know. You just wake up, you try to get a coffee, you got to hold it with two hands, you know, and you got to go to work. I mean, you don't even have to drink in the morning, you already blew the alcohol out of this, you know. It's sick. But I came back, I did demands to my family, first to my mom. It was the hardest thing for me is to forgive myself. Everybody else around, they're like, don't worry. And it was not that bad, you know. We always think it's worse, you know, than it is. And I'm at that point right now, I have to forgive myself. Sometimes I'm driving, and it's coming from nowhere. You know, our brain is just nuts. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember doing that. Oh, man, that was embarrassing, blah, 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 blah. Shut up. It's over. It's done. It's 10 years ago. And some people, you talk to them about it, they don't even remember. You're just the only one who remember about it, you know. So it's... For me, it's hard to forgive myself. I met a guy just today. Every day, sometimes I come in town. I live in St. Louis now. I bought a house in St. Louis, in the country. I don't have to get out to drink to isolate myself. I just want to do it. But my defect of character is still there. You know, I'm working on it. I ask God to remove it. Lately, like I said, it's tough in the morning. I forget to pray, but I pray during the day. I don't want to play catch up. I don't want to play like it's also a superstition. You know, if I don't pray, I have a bad day. You know, if I do that, it's not. So, it's a progress, and I see other people right now. And I have people at work that talk to me a little bit about it, and I know, but it comes in time. Like my mom says, she prayed so much for that, and she's Al-Anon, and she prayed so much, and she said, I couldn't do nothing, and she's right. You can't do nothing. If somebody, if you're ready to do it, like I said earlier, if you're ready to do it, if you're new, and you come here, I guarantee everybody here is going to help you at the best of their abilities. I will. So, that's all I have to say tonight. Thank you very much for my sobriety. And I'm Daniel, and I'll call you.